The Veritas Radio Network is guaranteed the right to offend, annoy, agitate, shout heresy, and entertain.
You should start programming right now.
Kind of like the cultural sewage served up on Bravo or CMT, only it's on 24 hours a day, except Sundays. When the truth gets you angry and you throw your smartphone, remember, no one is forcing you to listen to the truth on the Veritas Radio Network.
You can't handle the truth.
You're doing that of your own free will. That's what makes this country great and any gay marriage pointless.
That's offensive.
So there isn't much you can do about it, Chowderhead.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happens.
Grab a book, take a vow, and conform your mind to reality. Otherwise, you're just another Judas-inspired Karl Marx wannabe.
And your children will steal your credit card number to buy tickets to the Miley Cyrus Twerker's Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
Are you ready? Let's get it on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Welcome to this edition of the Constitution Hour, featuring our constitutional scholar expert, Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. Let's see, this is episode number 26 here on the Constitution Hour, meaning we've been at this over one half of a year, actually substantially longer than one half of a year. This show is presented here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be. If you miss any of the prior 25 episodes of the Constitution Hour, you can find all of them online at veritasradionetwork.com, and you can download all of them commercial-free right there if you are a Founders Pass member. Sign up for a Founders Pass today. Subscribe by the month or the year at veritasradionetwork.com/join. So we've been on hiatus for a few weeks of the summer here, and we're in the midst of the, not the Ides of March, the Ides of August, and are delighted to have Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman back here with us. And we'll begin this episode here by saying hello and welcoming the good doctor back from his travels across the Idahoan hinterlands and getting a daughter settled into the University of Virginia and now presently firmly re-ensconced in the beautiful western state of western Connecticut state hinterlands. How's that for an intro, Kevin?
That couldn't have been any better, Mike. Good job. Hey, let me describe to you one of the sights I saw in Idaho.
Okay.
I went to my parents' hometown, Salmon, Idaho, which is the biggest town in east central Idaho. Basically, it's right on the Montana border across the mountains from Missoula. My uncle took my dad and me in his Jeep truck up onto a hill overlooking Salmon, Idaho, and he pointed down the Salmon River, and he said, right over there on that bluff is where Lewis and Clark described staying one night. And then if you looked a little bit to the left, you could see the river. And across the river, past the town, there's this long range of mountains. It's about 15 miles long, six big, majestic, rocky mountains. And he said, that's Gutzman Ridge. It was recently named that for my grandfather, Lester Gutzman, who was the chief forest ranger in east central Idaho for over 30 years. So that was the first time I had seen it, and I'd heard this had happened, but I didn't know exactly which mountains were the ones affected. And it's just a huge chain of amazingly daunting and beautiful eminences on the skyline. This is, I think I've told you before, this is where when Lewis and Clark got to these mountains, their Indian guide told them, you can't go through there, it's too remote. If you try going in there, you'll starve to death. I'm not going with you. That's where my that's where my parents grew up. And so now they've named this large geographic feature after my grandfather. It was really, really great.
That's fantastic. I don't recall or know that there are any church ridges or church hollows or church's creek anywhere that I am related to in any way, shape, or form. So, Gutzman's Ridge. Well, fantastic. You know, I've always wanted to go to that part of the, I guess that's the north, the former Northwestern Territory or west of the Northwestern Territory.
Yeah, actually, if you've ever seen the movie A River Runs Through It,
yep,
that was filmed about 50 miles from my parents' hometown. And actually, if you want to get out to where my father grew up, it's still today 3 hours on a one-lane dirt mountain road from the nearest paved road. And you're going up over 7,000 feet. At some points, you look down off the one-lane road, and you can look straight down for over 3,000 feet.
Wow.
It is just... you might want to take your parachute in case the driver makes some kind of an error. You could leap out of the car. It's astounding. The fishing is amazing. The whole place, you know, the northwestern part of the country, not Washington State on the West Coast, but if you get a few score miles inland, that whole part of the country has a different kind of atmospheric smell about it, and it's just beautiful. At one point, my uncle said, okay, if you look at Gutzman Ridge and then you turn around, you directly around 180 degrees, you see another range of mountains over there. And then he says, look to your left, more mountains over there. Look to your right. That area is bigger than Connecticut. So these, this place we're standing in right now with mountains all around us, this is bigger than Connecticut. And where I live, where I'm sitting at the moment, there are slightly under 4 million people. And in this space bigger than Connecticut, where I was in Idaho, there are slightly over 4,000 people. It is the most pristine place other than Alaska in the United States. Really amazing. Now, I have been to 48 states, and I have never seen anything as pretty as the Rocky Mountains in Montana and Idaho.
Well, our Latinist expert, Ryan Grant, lives just outside of Coeur d'Alene. And he loves it, and he tells me stories similar to the one that you just shared. So I think we should resolve ourselves that we should all have, you know, the National Review magazine and other magazines. They take all their readers on these vanglorious cruises to Alaska, and you're on a Viking cruise to Vienna and all that. I think we should just do a full sideboard paneled van ride up Gutzman's Ridge.
I'm telling you, man, you have to eat your Wheaties before you go up there, because there are parts of that you can't get up unless you have a mule or a horse. You're not going to want to walk that far straight up and riding. Basically, my own feeling is I don't want to have somebody else driving me up there. I don't mind if I'm driving myself, but it's just crazy. And actually, this is all relevant to contemporary politics because, of course, when Thomas Jefferson followed up on James Monroe's brilliant diplomatic masterstroke and got Congress to appropriate money to complete the Louisiana Purchase, he thought eventually this whole area would be owned by private individuals. But today, much of Idaho, like much of most of the western states, is still in the control of the federal government. So Donald Trump has said, I think we should privatize these assets. There's no reason not to. And since we have an enormous government debt, we ought to sell these off. Of course, what that would mean is that somebody would put them to private use, thereby making society more prosperous, and we wouldn't have to manage them. We wouldn't have to pay interest on the debt. It's a winner all the way around.
Well, we can't have that. It makes way too much common sense. And if Donald Trump were to say that, then that would probably ignite riots somewhere in a big city somewhere.
Well, he has said it. He thinks that the government assets, where feasible, ought to be sold off.
You know, we should talk about Donald Trump. Specifically, we should talk about the competition for the 2016 November the 8th election, and that is, of course, Mrs. Clinton. Here's a story that is from August the 11th, while you were on a hiatus on holiday on Goodsman's Ridge, exclusive to the DailyCaller.com, joint FBI-U.S. attorney probe of Clinton Foundation is underway. Here's the pyramid. Multiple FBI investigations are underway involving potential corruption charges against the Clinton Foundation, according to a former senior law enforcement official. The investigation centers on New York City, where the Clinton Foundation has its main offices, according to the formal official, has direct knowledge of the activities. Prosecutorial support will come from various United States attorneys' offices, a major departure from other centralized FBI investigations. The New York-based probe is being led by Preet Bharara, the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Bharara's prosecutorial aggressiveness has resulted in a large number of convictions of banks, hedge funds, and Wall Street insiders. The official said involvement of the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York would be seen by agents as a positive development, as prosecutors there are generally thought to be more aggressive than career lawyers with the DOJ. Now, on episode, I misspoke earlier when I said we were 26 prior episodes of the Constitution Hour. We are doing episode number 29 today, and there are 28 prior episodes. And I believe it was on episode 28 you and I talked about this very matter here and about the possibility that one of those career agents in the very proud and very professional and very career-oriented FBI that was involved in that investigation of Mrs. Clinton and her emails, it's quite possible, probable, that one of them, if not a series of them, wishes to have the stain wiped from the agency, which is now stained by Hillary's corruption, which is now spread to the FBI by proxy. You know, people look at the FBI and go, they're a good federal agency. Yeah, they had career workers. Yeah, they're above board, et cetera, et cetera. Well, why didn't they do something about Hillary, et cetera, et cetera? Well, I am told that the agents did. But, of course, it was the politics of it that got in the way. So here is Mrs. Clinton yet again embroiled basically with the stain and the stink of corruption that is just not you just can't conceive of this, that this could happen during the midst of a campaign, and yet she remains ascendant? This is dangerous stuff, Professor.
Well, you know, Rudy Giuliani, who's now known as former mayor of New York, was before that a very headline-grabbing, attention-grabbing U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, which means New York City, essentially. And I've seen him say repeatedly that the Clinton Foundation is a RICO target. That is, it is a racketeer, influenced, corrupt organization. There's basically no way to describe its activities other than you have a high government official, and she and her husband, the former high government official, go around selling access to her and speeches from him, which really are about putting money in his pocket, all on the basis of the fact that she's still in high office and anticipates being in higher office. And Giuliani says this is just, although he was famous for putting a lot of mafia guys in prison, this is, he said, the easiest RICO case he's ever seen. It's just a big, fat, obvious, corrupt target. So I'm 53 years old, so I was 11 when President Nixon resigned. And when I was in high school, in the late 70s up to 1981, I read every Watergate figure's memoirs. I read all the memoirs. And I read a couple of neutral accounts. I read Woodward and Bernstein. I read all this stuff. And what Nixon did was so much smaller than what Mrs. Clinton has done. It was just, for example, he had the idea of sicking the IRS on his political opponents. right? He talked about doing that, or he made a list of people and issued threats. Well, I've told you before that I'm on the board of something called the Compact for America Education Foundation, and we actually had our application for 501c3 status delayed as part of Lois Lerner's scandal. It's, of course, it's called Lois Lerner's scandal, but you and I know that it's probably Valerie Jarrett's scandal or maybe Barack Obama's scandal. And nobody's been held responsible for this. The media don't care. And it's just astounding that it seems to be okay with top people in American government and top people in American journalism that the president should decide, all right, we'll have 5 to 6 month fast track for liberal groups that apply for 501c3 status. But if you're a libertarian or conservative sounding group, and what my group is about is just having a balanced budget amendment, which used to be Paul Tsongas's idea and Ross Perot's idea. It's not necessarily a conservative idea.
And of course, Paul Tsongas, a former candidate for the presidency on the Democrat ticket and a former senator from Massachusetts, right?
Right, and known as a liberal senator from Massachusetts.
Right.
Not a goofy, crazy one like John Kerry, but, you know, he was not on the right. So we were targeted for delay, and it took 15 months for us to get our 501c3 clearance, more than twice the length of time it was taking liberal groups to have their comparable applications acted on, right? This is, it's just appalling. It really is third world kind of stuff. There's just no other way to describe it. And so here you have Evita running for president. Basically, the ground of her candidacy is vote for me. I'm his wife.
Right.
Just as that was the ground of her candidacy for senator, and it was the ground of her candidacy for Secretary of State. It's embarrassing. Really, it's pathetic. I don't know what to say about it beyond that, and I'm just a little bit I'm highly unhappy about the fact that so many people who are in prominent positions in the American intellectual elite, journalists, law professors, other politicians, and so on, are happy to look the other way. If once this kind of precedent is established, things will not get better in the future. These precedents will be followed. There will be emulation. There will be other people outselling 20-minute speeches for $1 million and so on.
Well, and it sounds like we're on the course, we're on a collision course with rapidly becoming a banana republic of sorts, where we have a small coterie of people that are very well connected and refuse to, or even or don't even consider, for the benefit of the common good which they prefer to serve, that they should surrender voluntarily some portion of the power that they have accrued to themselves that was never constitutionally granted, but most certainly has, I guess you use the parlance of our time, we've seen a power grab. And, of course, the presidency is the place where most of this has grown and has been gathered together. You know, I was reading, and Kevin, you're probably familiar with this, but I was reading Ernest Hemingway earlier today about his comments on an essay that he wrote back in 1935 in Esquire magazine about war. And Hemingway said something, I was looking for the notes here in front of me, but I can't seem to find them. But Hemingway said something to the effect that you don't want to vest a war-making power or any kind of a very violent, dangerous power in an executive, simply because you don't know who it is that's going to be the executive, right?
Well, that's why we have constitutions in general. You don't know who's going to hold these positions. And I think people in America in general have lost any understanding of the reason why we'd want to have constraints on government. That is, it doesn't seem that, well, leaving aside the question whether the economics make any sense, it doesn't seem that people still have the Madisonian insight that politicians are not to be trusted because they're politicians, because they have a disposition to seek authority over you. We should begin by being skeptical of them. Not that they're necessarily all bad. I don't think they're all bad, but the fact of their wanting authority over you means that we want to be very loath to concede that they have power to do what they want to do. And, well, now it seems that it's not just the electorate, but it's a lot of people who should, in theory, should know better, who think, well, if my guy's in office, he can do whatever he wants.
Right.
He can just do whatever he wants. And this is not a partisan phenomenon. It's just as if we're going to have an elective dictatorship. And so my guy's in office, he can do what he wants. Notice you and I were complaining about this when the other party controlled the White House, so this isn't new for us.
No,
we're not hypocrites here, but of course a lot of people make these complaints without actually meaning them. But I find it not promising.
Here is the quote from Hemingway's Notes on the Next War, a serious topical letter. This is what he said, Kevin, quote, "We in America should see that no man is ever given, no matter how gradually or how noble and excellent the man, the power to put this country into a war, which is now being prepared and brought closer each day with all the premeditation of a long-planned murder. For when you give power to an executive, you do not know who will be filling that position when the time of crisis comes." Close quote, Ernest Hemingway. I think that Hemingway would find great common cause with James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, don't you think?
Well, of course, Hemingway had famously been involved in the First World War. He had been an ambulance driver in Italy, and he had seen how just ruinous the war was, and so he was loath to have that recur. And, well, now, again, we're used to the idea that presidents make war when they feel like it.
Right.
We have, I published an op-ed a couple of weeks ago about Secretary Clinton's running mate, Senator Tim Kaine from Virginia. He's made a name for himself over about the last year going around saying, being from Virginia, I'm a Madisonian. I think that Congress should have a say when it comes to whether we go to war. And so he said the Congress has an obligation to vote to give the president authority in Iraq and Syria. And my answer is, well, that's exactly backwards. We don't start with the Congress has authority over wars, and so once the president launches one, they're supposed to endorse it. That sounds like North Korea to me. So I think there's some kind of disconnect. But, you know, I have to say, well, at least that's better than what a lot of Democrats are saying, which is the president can do it if he wants, full stop. So, and of course, that's what Republicans were saying. So it's just worrisome that we've come to a point in which people think the problem in the government is that the Congress doesn't cooperate with the president enough. And the president is apt to make good policies if only the Congress would just vote yes. I think that there's no reason to believe this. I don't think the president is omnicompetent. I didn't think that about his predecessor. I'm not likely to think that about the next one. And the way this system is supposed to work is that we debate these big questions at length before finally taking a vote. But now, generally, the executive presents the so-called legislative branch with a fait accompli and says, vote for it. And then if you don't, well, I have a pen and a phone.
And well, also, Senator Kaine is one of the few, or he was one of the few members in the House of, or in the Senate, and actually, he's not doing it any longer. Now it's, how ironic is this? It was Kaine, Paul, and then your vaunted Senator, Chris Murphy, who have been ringing the alarm bell and saying, what are we doing sending weapons and munitions to Saudi Arabia to commit these war crimes that they're committing against the civilian population of Yemen? You know, on Saturday last, the Saudi Arabians admitted that their Air Force bombed a school. They killed 48 children. Now, we know this because Doctors Without Borders were the first ones, were the ones, the only people that will go into Yemen now, were called to try and mend together the little bodies that have been blown to bits by the Saudi air raid. Well, where did the Sauds get the armaments from? They got them from us. Where did the Sauds get the intelligence on how to drop these things and where to go? They got it from us. And it's been, it was Kane, along with Murphy and Paul, that tried to stop the sale. And I wasn't aware that our federal government was in the business of manufacturing arms so that we could sell them to other people either. That's a subject for another show, perhaps. But Senator Kane was one of the ones that said that this is unconscionable. We shouldn't be doing this. Of course, now that he's in bed with Mrs. Clinton, so to speak, he has to go along with this. So that leaves your Senator, Chris Murphy, and Senator Paul of Kentucky as the only voices in the entire august body that is the United States Senate that will speak up against this, Kevin.
Well, I haven't heard what Senator Kane has said about that since he became Mrs. Clinton's running mate. I did think that her choice of him was the first instance in which I thought, well, she made a good decision. That is, I didn't think there was a superior Democratic senator out there for her to select, and so, good. I actually would think it would be nice to have a Kane versus Pence election. That might that would be far less worrisome than the one we're heading toward. But anyway, my original point was, I think Mrs. Clinton is a world record corrupt candidate. I don't think there's ever been anything like her in history. I think even the politician who's regarded as the most corrupt president in our lifetime wasn't corrupt in this way. Nixon wasn't trying to pad his pockets. He decided to cover up for his friends who had done something illegal without his knowing about it, and it was in the obstruction of justice that he committed crimes. Mrs. Clinton, on the other hand, committed crimes herself to make money, and she got a bunch of other people involved in doing it so she could make money. One assumes that they were going to be making money too. This is absolutely just naked corruption. And then, again, the fact that she's a Vita, she's got nothing to stand on except that her husband was popular, makes it just kind of a mockery of Republican government. You know, this is the kind of thing that people in Britain who said Republican government can't work forecast would happen in the United States. What could be more dispiriting to somebody who favors a Republican form than a woman being elected president because she's a former president's wife? And I do not know any other reason why anybody's voting for her. Well, some people are voting for her because they dislike the Republicans. And of course, that's a standard reason why people vote for one or the other party, because they loathe the other party more. I think there's some validity to aligning with the Republicans because you don't like the Democrats or vice versa, so fine. But as far as a positive message, Mrs. Clinton is Bill Clinton's wife, and she's female. That's it.
That's it.
That's all there is.
All you get.
Yeah. So that is dopey and corrupt and third world and an augury of worse to come. And then she is personally a money-grubbing exploiter of whatever favor the voters decide to shower on her husband and her. I think actually the idea that the first thing that ought to happen after she's sworn in is that the impeachment hearings begin is a good idea.
I think it's actually a great idea.
She ought to be, they ought to have a vote on impeaching her on day one. I'm not kidding.
I concur. Hold that thought. Let's take our first time out here. We'll come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about what is going on with religious people, whether they be priests, preachers, pastors, cookie makers, photographers, florists, who are now being compelled by government by government threats and threats of extortion on economic means. Basically being told that they must do things that they cannot and should not previously, and know that they should not and could not previously do. and keeping good conscience and being in line with their religion. This is a situation that is growing. It's getting worse. And we have some recent examples of it. And we're going to talk about it here on the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman. This is the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. We'll be right back with more Constitution Hour here on the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be.
The professor is in. Send your questions for Professor Kevin Gutzman to constitution@veritasradionetwork.com.